Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, the rumor is true. Southwest is tweaking their boarding process soon. And the travel industry bands together to help Maui recover. Those stories next in the news.
In our Smarter Traveler segment at 3:20, you already know that Mark is a huge believer in Apple AirTags. And today, he has another story of a traveler whose AirTag led her right to her lost bag. A reminder once more why we should have one in our own suitcase.
In Europe, they just made it okay to make phone calls on planes during flights. Is the U.S. next to allow phone calls on planes? There are some strong opinions on this one. We'll discuss at 3:35.
And at 3:50, we ask the question, for a long-distance trip, would renting an electric car make more sense than a gas guzzler? Well, how about just around town? We have some answers to the question.
Information to make you a smarter traveler. Thanks for joining us today on The Travel Guys.
On the road again.
I've been everywhere, man.
Aruba, Jamaica,
Solo, Seattle.
Get your kicks on Route 66.
Welcome everyone to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano with you, all brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations, locally sourced. Yes, sir. Thanks for coming along. Hey, Mark, how's it going? What's new?
No, not too bad, sir. It's been a pretty good weekend. The next 2 days are going to be hotter than Hades, so it was nice. We had a little high-stakes poker game here at Sports Leisure Vacations yesterday. The quarters were flying among my old buddies and I, so it's been a good weekend.
Outstanding. Mark has, and I imagine a few of you might fall into this category, friends from high school all those years ago. What, Mariloma?
Yep, Mariloma.
Yeah, and they get together periodically for a Saturday afternoon poker game. Pretty exciting. By the way, just quickly, the Travel Guys, looks like we're going to be moving from our regular Sunday shift at this time, 3 to 4, to Saturdays at 11 a.m. More details to follow.
And we're going to take a moment here at the top of the program. I just want to talk a little bit about the situation over in Hawaii. It was only last week that we were here on the program talking about Kauai, and I had just returned from there, and what a great place it is to visit, and what the islands in general offer to travelers from the mainland, only to find out that horrible fires had broken out on two islands, particularly on Maui, which pretty much has rendered the town of Lahaina, particularly the part that tourists are familiar with, non-existent. Didn't get the hotels further up the coast, the Anapali hotels that many people stay in. So hotel-wise, there's still places to stay. But in terms of places to go and things to do and stuff in that historic little town, including the over-century-old banyan tree that's the centerpiece of the town, if you've ever been to Lahaina, you know that that tree is kind of the marker in town. And the fire indeed burned all the way to the ocean there. And the tree is still standing, but it remains to be seen how much damage it incurred and whether or not there will be any life in that old tree. But nonetheless, I'm sure the people in Lahaina will rebuild. The saddest thing about this, Tom, really is that the people in Hawaii are really the kindest, most gentle people. They are so accommodating to visitors and such nice people that it's horrible to see this happen to them. So for those of you who are thinking about going over there, as you just heard in the news, don't go over there right now. Even if the part of the island that you may be going to, even though your hotel may be operational, we'll have an update on all of this in a minute. It right now is just not the time to go there. Other islands, fine. If you can get a hotel room, I'm sure that there's a lot of overflow from Maui going to the other islands. They're fine, and they can still use your tourist dollars. But for Maui, for right now, you've got to wait at least a month or so. And I might suggest to you that unless you have a burning reason to go, wait a cycle, give these folks an opportunity to get back on their feet, get some essential services going and stuff. But for now, Just keep the folks from Hawaii in your thoughts. They spread so much aloha, and they constantly are reminding visitors, you know, through their language and through their actions. So right now is a good time to keep them in your thoughts and send a little aloha back their way.
Well said, Mark. All right, my friends, at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date with the travel news. And that was just part of it. Mark, what else you got for us today on the travel news?
Well, Brazil is going to bring back visa requirements for U.S. travelers. We told you a couple weeks ago that you're going to have to take another step to go to Europe next year. It's not exactly a visa, but it's another step. They want some more information about you coming into the country. Brazil is bringing back visa requirements for U.S. travelers. So if you're planning a trip to Brazil sometime in the foreseeable future, be aware of the fact that you're going to have to have a visa to get into the country there. Italy is doing something. They've been struggling with over-tourism the last couple of years. Whether that will continue into next year is anybody's guess, but Italy has come up with a novel idea. They're going to take particularly some of their trains that run commuter routes during the week and turn them into tourist trains on the weekends. Some of the routes that are express trains during the week will become locals on the weekend, which will allow tourists to travel between popular destinations and to get around a little bit easier by train, hopefully ease some of the traffic situation, make it a little bit easier on tourists in the country. So congratulations to Italy for work. At least they're working towards a solution. We mentioned in the headlines that the travel industry is banding together to help those impacted in Hawaii by wildfires. Just a few things that are happening. First of all, airlines have all during the week, particularly United and American, flew a lot of empty planes to Kahului to pick up people. In other words, instead of taking 200 people over there and bringing 200 people out, that doesn't really help much. Take the plane over empty, then you can bring it back full. Now you haven't added to the problem, but you've subtracted from the number of people in the Kahului airport, which on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday was pretty traumatic. It's a lot better today. There was only a handful of people now sleeping overnight in the airport. There was 600-700 people on Wednesday and Thursday. So, for those of you who have been there, it's not a particularly large airport to start with, and it's usually overflowing for about half of the day when the mainland flights are going. So they don't have a lot of extra empty space there. But airlines were doing their share. Southwest moved a couple of planes over to Hawaii just to run extra flights off of Kahului to get people to other islands, because many people chose to continue their vacation just by getting bookings at other hotels on other islands. Some folks chose to come home. So airlines were doing their part. And gosh, we give the airlines a ration of crap on a regular basis on this program. So it's important to note that in this case, several of them stepped up to the plate, capped airfares so that people who were having to buy tickets on short notice on flights they didn't intend to be on weren't having to pay through the ceiling. Southwest and Hawaiian ran $19 fares through the around the islands to get people where they needed to go. Hotels, particularly on the Kaanapali coast, that's why we mentioned even if your hotel wasn't impacted by the fire, your hotel may have been repurposed to help people who are either still fighting the fire or helping with the cleanup or helping to restore essential services like internet and telephone and things of that sort to the area. So, I mean, if you've seen the pictures, you know that in that small area around Lahaina, man, there's just nothing left at all. So those people really seriously need some help. And apparently help is on the way, but congratulations at least to the travel industry for doing what they can instead of seizing the opportunity to make a buck, which is what usually happens from the airlines and stuff. In this case, they stepped up. They've gotten 46,000 people. The update from Hawaii as of this morning says 46,000 people have flown out of Kahului Airport since Wednesday. That's a lot of people. I just want to tell you, that's a lot of people. Visitors with plans to stay in West Maui in the coming weeks and months are urged to consider rescheduling their travel plans for a later time. This is the official announcement update this morning from the islands when the overall situation has improved for area residents. That's the thing to really consider right now is that think of more than just yourself. If you're going there and the place that you're going or the area you're going on Maui, you're thinking maybe okay. A lot of those resources need to be repurposed right now. So it's a good idea just to stay away. Don't be an ambulance chaser. Hotels in West Maui have temporarily stopped accepting bookings of future reservations for coming months because in some cases their employees and families are staying in the hotels themselves. And, of course, as I mentioned, workers who are going to be working to restore essential services there. So travel to other islands are not affected at this time. So that's the official update from the folks in Hawaii. If you are thinking of heading over to the islands and you're not planning, we're not planning to go to Maui, then the word is still go. One other story I want to just mention here at the close. Actually, I've got two stories here. One is, this is not really a tourism story, except for the fact that the boat that was involved was a tourist boat. You may have read about the situation in Montgomery, Alabama, where a tourist boat tried to dock last week, and some men had a pontoon boat there, and they refused to move and to allow the tourism boat to dock the dinner cruise, and a melee ensued on the dock there. Kind of bad news for Montgomery. That's a city that has had a lot of racial tensions in the past. This looked to be, at least to start with, a little bit of a racially motivated situation. If you've watched the video, as I have, a man who was black, who was the co-captain of the boat, was attacked by several white men, the men from the pontoon boat, who refused to move. It was kind of a situation that really didn't need to happen. But it kind of points out some of the divisions in the country right now are just really, I mean, for a situation like that to turn to garbage is just kind of surprising, but especially to the people who thought they were just buying a dinner cruise into the evening. One last story here. Southwest Airlines, it says the headline, this is clickbait, Southwest Airlines making huge boarding process change. News has leaked that the airline is going to do something very different with a key part of its boarding process. If you buy the early bird boarding, this might impact you. Otherwise, it won't change the way you fly on Southwest Airlines. They have traditionally offered people the opportunity to pay. It started out at $15. Now it's up, I think, $30, $40, $50, depending on the length of the flight. You, with a ticket you had, you could pay a fee and line cut. You could jump up to one of the first 15 spaces to board. So Southwest has realized, it probably took a rocket scientist or a bead counter somewhere to realize that, people were not buying the higher fares because the cost to buy the early bird line cut was cheaper than buying one of Southwest's higher fares that also got you that line cut. So Southwest is saying now that they're going to eliminate the early bird boarding method for some of their flights. And they're not, this is according to an internal memo that somebody got their hands on, and so we don't have all the details yet. But if you're just a regular old Southwest flyer, this probably isn't going to affect you. If you're somebody who buys the early bird thing on some situations and think, wow, I can get this for $30, and their next level fare up was $100, and you beat the system, I think they're coming to get you. So that's the big change that all the clickbait people are going to be talking about. So if you're just a regular Southwest customer who just logs in and takes what you get, this isn't going to change what you get. And that's your travel news for today.
There you go. And on a side note, I'm going to throw this in real quick. For those of you that have family members, young children that maybe what is referred to as unaccompanied minors, which I have. I have a couple of granddaughters in Austin, Texas, come to visit quite frequently. The fee has been in the past $50 a child each way. So if you got two, it's 100 for one, 100 for the other, 200. You know, and I can, you know, I can see an increase in fares. That is a, you know, a big job. I expect my grandkids to travel safely and to be watched over. Well, they've raised the companion fare as of August the 15th to $100 each way. So it went from $200 to $400 extra to fly my grandchildren here. And I don't know. I brought it up to Mark, and Mark, you indicated and made a point that it's probably worth a lot more than $50 for somebody to watch your kids on a plane for 3.5 hours. So
well, there's a liability factor there, but you would like to think that they would be organized enough and encounter this situation. I mean, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of minors flying every day. And some are kids who have flown on planes before, so they're pretty cool with it. And some are kids who are going for the first time. And some are parents who, you know, are cool with the whole thing. And some are parents who are scared to death. So I don't know. The liability to the airline has to be pretty high. But the flip side is, what's the actual cost of doing this? And should it be borne? Should it be shared by everybody? Or should it just be completely paid? And how much money is the airline making? My thought is it's probably some of both. The costs of doing this have gone up, and the airline has said, you know, $50 is not enough to charge for this, or $100 is not enough to charge for this, and the market will bear this. I'm sure there are bean counters somewhere, Tom, who said, better out of your pocket and into ours.
Well, and it still costs you $95 to take your pet and put him in that space underneath your feet that you already paid for.
Wait. So wait, it's cheaper for the pet by $5 each way than the kid. So put the kid in a cage and put him under your seat, and you can save $5.
Only you would think of that. So Mark, you got another story to share with us and how that AirTags can really, really be a positive way of getting your bags back.
We've talked about this a couple of times, and really and truly, if you're a frequent traveler and you haven't done this yet, then you need to do it, because here's another example. Here's the setup. Lady and her daughter are flying to a lacrosse tournament. They're coming, and then they're coming back home to Baltimore through Chicago. So they get to Baltimore, and the lacrosse kit equipment is not on the luggage belt. So they talk to the United reps, and they say, well, it'll be on the next flight from Chicago in a few hours. And it wasn't. And they said, well, it'll be in later today. And it wasn't. And they said, well, we don't know where it is. And the lady said, well, I know where it is. It's in Chicago. It's at luggage claim in Chicago. And United said, no, it's not there. And she said, yes, it is. She said, it has an AirTag. And I can tell you that not only is it at luggage claim in Chicago, in the last couple hours it's been moved 50 feet or so. Well, what had happened was the agent had put the wrong tag on the bag. So the agent accidentally tagged her bag with a Chicago passenger's tag. So when the flight got to Chicago, her bag showed that should be offloaded in Chicago. So they did. Of course, that wasn't where it was supposed to be offloaded, so she didn't pick it up. So it got left on the belt. The reason it moved 50 feet, according to the AirTag, was because somebody had to take it off the belt and move it over to the United Luggage Office. And there it sat. So for 3 days, this lady tries to convince United Airlines that the bag is at their luggage office in Chicago. But United Customer Service isn't allowed to call Chicago's baggage service. They have to put in an email and get them to respond to it. And Chicago doesn't respond to it. So the lady tries again the next day. Same thing happens. By the third day, the lady says, look, this is expensive equipment. It's sitting in Chicago. United says, no, it isn't. She uses her miles to get on a plane and fly to Chicago. And according to her story, within 30 seconds of walking up to the United baggage claim, she had spotted the bag and it was in her possession. All she had to do was show ID. The bag had indeed been there the whole time. She couldn't get United to even make a phone call, which would have confirmed where the bag was. The system is so loaded down that when the customer offered a solution, United couldn't accept it because their system wasn't allowed to do that.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. So the solution is that if they are not going to help you, you just have to board a plane and go get it yourself.
The solution is, folks, that in many cases, these AirTags, listen, people are putting these in the pockets of small children when they go out to events and stuff like that, so they can know if they lose the kit, they know where their child is. That makes perfect sense. I suppose you could carry this to an extreme that wouldn't make good sense. But nonetheless, so this is the deal. At TravelGuysRadio.com, I put a link to Amazon where you can buy these air tags. There's four of them for $10. Why, for what you pay for an airline ticket, why you would not consider buying four of these air tags? You only need one or two. Give to your spouse, your partner, your friends, your family, whomever you can give them to. It's very simple. I have one in my bag. It tells me wherever my bag goes. I mean, it's almost a nuisance sometimes. It tells me, hey, you left your bag behind. Well, I left it behind at the hotel, and I know it's there. But anyway, really and truly, folks, there's not any better tip than I can give you right now about keeping track of your luggage than to get one of those air tags and put it in any bag that you find significant. Because like this lady, United finally now is going to actually reimburse her miles for her ticket. That she spent to go get her bag, that she knew where it was. I mean, how ridiculous is all of this? But if I were United Airlines, I would be embarrassed that this had become public. But maybe there's a lesson in here that when somebody tells you that they know where their stuff is, you might want to pay attention. You might want to have a system that allows you to communicate with your team and find out if the person is telling you the truth or not.
Amazing. By the way, real quick, because we're almost out of time for the first half of the show, did your coworker settle up with United over the lost baggage and the expenses that he had to incur to replace his clothing?
Not yet. He got his bag back, but we're still negotiating with United. The negotiations will end soon. Because we're not going to be patient with United forever, but we'll give you an update when we have one. Thanks for asking.
All right, Mark.
Including, yeah. Mm-hmm. I must say one more time, a link to where you can get AirPods for whatever for $10. The Apple things. Unfortunately, I don't get a percentage off of those. Other companies make them too. So it's not just an Apple product that you have to buy. You can get them from a number of people. But nonetheless, whichever you can do. Okay. So anyways, this isn't going to make any sense to anybody who's listening to the podcast, but I'm going to say it anyway just for your benefit, Mr. Romano. The Giants blew a lead in the ninth inning. The Rangers scored in the top of the 10th. With two outs in the bottom of the 10th, the Giants has got a two-run homer from their catcher, Mr. Bailey, and beat the and won the game against Bruce Bochy's Texas Rangers at the ballpark, 3-2.
Yay, we got one out of three.
I only mention this because there are now a bunch of sports leisure travelers who are going to have a much nicer road trip back home than they would have had otherwise. So,
okay. Well, so you had a busload of sports leisure vacationers at the game.
That's how we started all these many years ago, taking people.
Yeah,
to the Giants
with the popularity of the Giants and as well as they're doing, did you increase the number of trips to the games? And do you have more in the future?
We added one later this month, which is sold out, and then we have an overnight trip to see the Giants and Dodgers last two games of the season. Which doesn't look like the Giants are going to catch the Dodgers to win the division, but it could very well have some wild card playoff implications or something like that. But anyway, that's the last two games, so that's all for this year. But we'll go to spring training. We're going to go see the Giants and the Cubs in Chicago next year. We got some other things up our sleeve also. So thank you for asking, sir. Appreciate that. But yes, there are 42 people who are headed for a motor coach sitting outside the ballpark. Who at least those who were Giants fans are going to have a much nicer ride home. And what a weekend.
Yeah.
Giants fans provided. Bruce Bochy came back home, old manager of the Giants, the three world championship teams, is managing the Texas Rangers now. And every day there was an opportunity for people to stand up and cheer, and they did quite loudly. So Giants fans, don't forget. Anyway, sorry this turned into a sports program for a couple of minutes. But this was the most responded to question, I believe, that Chris Elliott, our buddy Chris Elliott, the consumer advocate, has ever posed to his people online. And that was, what do you think about having cell phones on calls on planes? In Europe, at the end of last year, The governing body in the European Union said, okay, this has to happen no later than June 30th of this year. As of a couple weeks ago, they're still trying to figure it out. The Wi-Fi service level has been increased on aircraft in Europe. That's why one reason why they think they can pull this off. When Chris put it out on his website and asked people for comments, oh, my goodness. More comments than just about anything I'd ever seen. And people are not, like, in the middle of the road on this. People are, you know, I fly. I'm working. I sometimes need to make a call when I'm on a flight. It would be a great convenience to me and a huge asset to be able to have access to a telephone on a plane. Okay, that makes pretty good sense to me. But we know how obnoxious people can be in public spaces. Do you really want somebody next to you in an airplane with nothing to do except get on their cell phone and talk to their friends about irrelevant subjects for a couple of hours and you have to sit next to them? And some people can get kind of animated when they talk on cell phones and their voices carry. And can you imagine what this might be on an aircraft? I don't know that there's going to be any way to stop it, but I'm not in favor of it. How do you feel, Mr. Romano?
Wow, you know, from a business standpoint, or somebody vacationer's standpoint, you know, if you're going to be late to your destination and you need to let the car rental or your hotel know, and you were not able to make that call and get that done while you were at your last stop or at an airport, the ability to be able to make that call in the air, I think, would be really beneficial. And here again, business people, I could see how that would benefit them. Mm-hmm. Chatting it up on the plane, I think that's not a good idea. I don't know how you could restrict what people would do. Texting, I think, is probably the more appropriate thing between friends and family while on board. I've done that quite a few times. We've been flying in, and you want to let people know that when you're getting there and all of that sort of stuff.
Yep.
So I got kind of mixed emotions, but I'm kind of with you, Mark. I would not want to sit next to somebody who decides to use a 3.5-hour flight to, romance their girlfriend or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know. I'm
and the
mixed
thing
emotions.
Here's the deal. You know, I get on the 515 to Denver with a group of people on a pretty regular basis, and the first thing I'm going to do when I get on that plane is put in my earphones, put my seat back the half inch that they allow me to, put my neck pillow on, and I'm out of here for the next 2 hours and 15 minutes. I do not, at 5:15 in the morning, need somebody next to me who needs to talk to somebody about, and there's going to be no way to stop this once it starts. And there's going to be no way to stop it. I really don't think there's going to be any way to stop it. It's something that's going to happen. And then we're going to be at the mercy of the goodwill of, and some of the things that Chris's people suggested in some of their comments was, well, maybe you could create a quiet zone on the plane. Amtrak has cars on some of their Acela trains between Washington, D.C. and New York City that are quiet cars. And you're not allowed to do cell phone calls or whatever, but you intentionally sit in that car, and you know what the rules are, hypothetically. And if you didn't want to play by those rules, you sit somewhere else. In an airplane, it's going to be hard to divide cabins, but somebody pointed out that the airline could charge more to sit in the quote, quiet area and not put small children or people who wanted to talk on phones. Other people have also pointed out that the no cell phone rule, if you log on to the airline's Wi-Fi system and it's operating properly, in many cases you can make calls already from airplanes. So some people have been getting around this already. They're just not telling people about it. So it's already and that's the reason it isn't a problem, is because the people who are gaming the system are saying, shh, we don't want anybody to know that we're doing this. And that's what makes it okay, is because they're somewhat restrictive about it. But I just can't imagine. A family gets on a plane and they've got three small children and the kids have nothing to do except call each other on the cell phones. Or, I mean, the possibilities are limitless.
Yeah, and there's the situation is you're making the call. Are you basically, you're not going to put it on speaker. so that everybody can hear both sides of the conversation. So you're going to hear the person making the calls voice, comments, and otherwise. Maybe you're using Bluetooth headphones to do that. And you go, uh-huh, oh, yeah, oh, really? And that's all you're going to hear. You're not going to hear the so, you know, there's no entertainment value in it either. Whatever my point was, I was about to say was, what happened to this safety regulation? Please turn your device off.
Well,
make sure your phone is in safe, is in airplane mode.
Well, okay.
What happened to all of that?
Under the system that we currently have, there's a possibility that there could be some overlap if people were trying to use phones. But with the system that the Europeans have worked out, that's gone away. So as soon as that's adopted by aircraft here, then there'll be no reason anymore for, I mean, obviously, here's the deal. The airline people are going to have to, the flight attendants are going to have to get people to, hey, put your cell phone down while we're making the safety announcement. And, hey, you can't make a cell phone call when we're below 10,000 feet and we're coming into the airport, or you can't make a call in the first 10 minutes out or something like that. So there's going to have to be some minor restrictions at least, but will you even be able to enforce those? I don't see any sign that people are going to suddenly get much more civilized to each other in the sky. I'd like to think that they would, but because there is some safety element here, but the biggest element to all of this is a courtesy element. The biggest thing is, if you need to make a call and you're sitting in a row of three people, no matter where you are you going to make the call and say, hey, you know, I'm on an airplane, I just needed to communicate this to you, or I needed to know ABC, and thank you very much for the answer. I'll talk to you more when I get on the ground. Thank you. Goodbye. I don't have any particular issues with that. People are having person-to-person conversations on the plane all the time. But what I can see is the animated conversation that goes on forever. And, I mean, right now people are restricted to talking to people that they're flying with. People who aren't flying pretty much have to sit there and talk to themselves. That problem will go away now. They will all have somebody to talk to. Anyways, yeah. I'm not particularly in favor of it. I don't think it's going to be a plus. And the other thing I think it's going to do is cause more problems on the planes, because somebody's going to be making a call and they've talked forever and the person next to them has been polite. And now the person on the other side of them is going to say, you know, I'm not going to be so polite anymore. You're driving me nuts. And then you're going to have a problem.
You know, and everybody approaches a phone call on a cell phone differently. Some people feel compelled to shout like the person can't hear them when they're on the phone, especially if they're talking to a mom or dad, the senior mom or dad.
Who might not be able to hear them.
Right.
And the reason they're shouting,
Right, the voice starts to get a little loud. Fascinating, and I can really see with just our little short conversation here, I can see why Chris Elliott had a lot of response.
Yes.
And very, very animated response as well.
We'll get Chris on here on the air with us in the next couple of weeks. I'm making a list of Chris Elliott subjects, and I will put this on it. But it's indeed, if you go to Elliott.org, and you read the comments here, there's about 40 or 50 of them, and just reading the comments really and truly are fascinating. It will give you both sides of the issue. Chris's online comments tend to be better than other people's because there aren't people in doing snarky things and saying things that are totally off subject. But anyway, Elliott.org is where you can find that. Phones on planes, coming soon to a flight near you.
Quick note, travel guys are moving to Saturdays. Should be about September 2nd. More information to follow. 11 a.m. Is the planned new time. And for the 40% of you that download our podcasts, I know you don't even care. All right, here we go. Have you rented an electric car yet, Mark, on any of your journeys?
I haven't. I've thought about it, especially after I read an article recently, and it's the second one like this I've read, where they've talked about just average Joes are renting an electric vehicle sometimes when they're renting a car just so they have an opportunity to try one out.
I have rented specific kinds of new cars, because rental cars, in most cases, will rent you new automobiles. Once they're a little used, then they sell them and get other new cars, mm-hmm. with the specific intention of it being a car that I was interested in buying, you know, and that would be a way to try one for a few days and find out whether I liked it before I was going to go down and spend my money. So same thing. You're thinking about maybe going electric. Everybody's thinking about at what point in their life will they be, you know, forced or choose to enter that that arena. And I think renting an electric car and experiencing it that way is a perfect way to do it, as long as it doesn't cost more than 10% over the price of any other car you might rent.
Well, the only, and here's what the experts are pointing out, is that lots of people are doing this, and they're telling you one of the things that we tell people frequently on this program. You know, we have two things we say, you know, the F word, be flexible. And that still is the case with many of the destinations post-COVID that you're traveling to. You have to be flexible because not everybody's well-staffed, and some of the staff don't have a clue what they're doing. So there's still a learning curve involved there. And the other thing we tell people is do their homework. And so this is a situation where definitely you want to do your homework, even if it's just a local rental. Your car goes into the shop, so you've got to have a car for a couple of days. It doesn't have anything to do with travel. Or you're going on a trip, or you're thinking about driving from here to Salt Lake City and back, and you've got a reason that you're not flying and you're driving, and you thought, well, maybe I'll take an electric car because that'll be cheaper. And that's the assumption that this not well-informed consumer about electric cars made until I sat down and started to do some homework last week. And indeed, Tom, a lot of this, the answer to, is it cheaper to use an electric car than a gas guzzler? The answer is sometimes, and it depends. It depends how much your car rental company is charging you as a premium for that electric vehicle. So if you're paying a huge premium, you're negating a lot of the savings. Now, if you're just doing what we're talking about here and it's kind of a trial run, then maybe that's worth it to you to do it that way. But what's happened is that there are a variety of different ways and places to recharge electric vehicles, and not everybody charges the same. So just like the service station, the ARCO station may be $369 for self-serve regular that you pay in cash, and the Chevron may be $549 for self-serve that you put on your credit card, that's a pretty significant difference in price. If you were to fill up a tank of 15 to 20 gallons, there would be a $20, $30, $40 difference in the price of gasoline. Same thing happens with charging electric vehicles. And my suggestion to you is that the hotels and some of these places have not figured out yet that this is a revenue source. And it's still as more people use them and they figure this out, you're going to see deals like, instead of a room with breakfast, you're going to see a room with a charging station. And the charging station will be discounted as a revenue source to a parking place that used to not get them anything unless they were ripping off people for charging parking. But in this case, they'll be able to charge you for parking and for the recharging station. And all over the country, you're developing two or three classes of electric car recharging stations. Some are super fast chargers, and they charge you additional for that. So you can get your car charged really quickly to go a long distance, but you have to pay up for it. Does it sound familiar? And you want to just get your car charged regularly, then that's fine. And if you're in an overnight spot, a hotel or a restaurant might say, you know what, here's an incentive to our customers. We've got six charging stations. We don't charge anything for it. You're driving an electric vehicle, come on over to our place. And we are probably still a couple of years away from that, marketing-wise, but there's going to become a time where that probably is going to become a marketing incentive for some of the places, particularly places that you might go and stay 4 or 5 hours at. You know, you're going to an attraction and you're riding a train, or you're taking a walking tour or something, and you're going to have lunch, you're going to be gone for a long time. Now, the length of time, you know, you were going to have to pay to park at that attraction anyway. You only paid $10 more to charge your car. Now you've got to, it's going to be more homework and more arithmetic. Does that make sense? Because it's going to be like choosing a place to fill up your car with gas. is where do you fill up your place when you charge it, and how visible are those charges, especially to tourists who are not used to them? And I think that will probably be something that we're going to see develop in the next 12 to 36 months, 1 to 3 years, I would say.
Wow, this is crazy talk. Yes, one more thing to make your head spin around and fly off backwards.
Well, and people would think, Tom, I'm a guy who, as I've watched the whole electric vehicle thing, I assumed that there were two things that were given. One is the car cost more to start with, and two is it costs less to operate once I owned it. So I would pay in advance more, but then the savings would start immediately, and they would incur through the whole life of the vehicle. It appears as though that depends on, again, which gas station you choose to pump to put your gas in. Where do you choose to have your car charged? Do you charge it at home with your own charger that you've already paid for, and now you're only paying for the electricity, or are you paying somewhere else where somebody's making a profit on charging your car? So that may have the answer to our question about whether you use an electric car for a long distance or a short rental will depend on you having done your homework and knowing what it costs to recharge that car and how many times you're going to have to do it along the way.
There you go. Got it back to the same thing. You got to do your homework and the F word.
Yeah.
Flexibility. You know, there is so many little nuances, and there are so many things still changing and evolving in regards to electric cars. So even the conversation that we're having now will be somewhat obsolete a year from now.
San Francisco, just the other day, clearance given for taxis that are not manned. So unmanned taxis around town. All right, we're just about at the end of our journey for this week. A couple of things that I want to remind you. Next week we're going to talk about food tours in and around Sacramento. That should be fun. And also Charlie Leoka from Travelers United is going to join us. We're about to maybe see some movement on some of this state and federal resort fee thing. So maybe Charlie will be able to give us an update. Perhaps there's a way that we can exert as consumers a little bit of influence here. Charlie may be able to tell us where we can make a phone call to or something like that. Sometimes in the early stages of these things, a response really matters. So Charlie will fill us in next week. So food and a little resort fee information. That'll be the Travel Guys. Next week, we'll still be at our own old time for a couple more weeks. And in the meantime, dance like nobody's watching.
There you go, my friends. Don't forget, TravelGuysRadio.com. See you next week here on the Travel Guys.